Now it's time for the Southern Cross.
Southern Cross is back today, and I am talking to Pacific Media Watch contributing editor Michael Andrew and special guest Manny Cruz, an Indigenous journalist from the Pacific Daily News in Guam and a doctoral student with AUT's Pacific Media Centre. Manny will be discussing the media in Guam based on his research, as well as a new law that has recently been passed there. But first, Michael, you're going to talk a little bit about what has been happening in the Pacific and what the news is at the moment.
Yes, indeed. So there were quite a few stories that it came out last week, the most significant of which would probably be the incarceration of the newsroom journalists in Fiji. So Mark Jennings and Melanie Reed and their cameraman were detained in the Suva police station overnight due to a criminal trespass order by a Chinese development company called Freesol, whom they were investigating. So there were allegations that there had been some environmental damage on Malolo Island, and the journalists went there to ask some questions, and they were told to leave. And when they left the island, they were approached by police and asked to accompany them to the police station where they were held overnight. So that story broke last week, but the next morning they were released without charge and accompanied to see the Prime Minister, Frank Bainimarama, and where they received a formal apology. So it blew over fairly quickly, but quite a serious incident, especially for Fiji, who was trying to clean up their media image.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I'm sure it's pleasing for Fiji that it moved, it was sort of brushed over quite quickly and sorted out quite quickly. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think that's why the reaction from the Prime Minister was so emphatic.
Yeah,
an official apology just to show that there's no hard feelings, and that the charges were the result of some rogue officers, and it wasn't the jurisdiction of the police or the government. So,
that is interesting. So, what else has been happening?
The other story would be the Solomon Islands election, which took place last week. So they're still counting the votes for that one. But it's the first election that's taken place since the Australian and New Zealand mission pulled out in 2017. So that was kind of like a peacekeeping mission. It's called the Regional Assistance Mission to Solomon Islands, and it was requested by the Governor General in 2003 just to get some help to settle things down. So it's the first election since Australia and New Zealand left. And it went relatively smooth, according to reports. There were a lot of fears that there would be trouble, but the votes are coming in, and it looks like a lot of the incumbent politicians have been re-elected. There are a few issues that you can read about on the Asia-Pacific report in terms of the counting and how the voting system works, but a relatively smooth election.
Is the outcome predicted to be sort of a smooth transition, or is it depending on who's elected, there could be troubles lying there as well?
As I said, a lot of the incumbents have been re-elected. There were fears because in previous elections there's quite a bit of intimidation tactics and trying to influence votes on the night before the election. According to reports, that didn't happen as much. So they are predicting it's not going to be that troublesome. But there is a lot of corruption in the Solomon Islands and the government, so that's going to be an ongoing issue as well.
Great. So is it okay if we move on to Manny?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Perfect.
Manny.
So, Manny, what is your understanding of the new law legalising recreational marijuana in Guam, and how is it being received there?
Awesome. I think it's been received quite well. The law itself actually legalizes the possession of 1 ounce or less of marijuana. So I guess, like, they're not really clear on why they chose that number specifically, but I guess it's to rule out whether someone is possessing it for the intent of a sale.
Or recreational use, right? Is that sort of what the difference is?
Exactly. So, 1 ounce or less, you're now allowed to possess on you. Really, you can only consume it, though, in your home right now. And There is some pushback from people in the community. There is a businessman there who, the same day that the law was signed by our governess, he filed a lawsuit in the federal government stating that Guam, because it's a colony of the United States, does not have the authority to deviate from federal law. So, according to our Attorney General, Levin Camacho, in any other state or territory, there isn't an instance where the federal government has stepped in preemptively, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think, though, that it's a positive step. This past election season, Guam became one of the first states or territories to have a majority female legislative body. They jokingly called it the ladies' lature. Yeah. And we now have, I think, maybe the first female governor.
Wow.
Something like that in the territory. So, yeah.
So it's moving in a positive direction, you would say.
Progressively, for
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In some instances.
So from your perspective and in terms of your research, why is it that Guam and other parts of the North Pacific are virtually absent in New Zealand media?
Yeah. So there are people here in Aotearoa, like Lana Lopesi, who refer to this phenomenon as the false divide. A lot of it has to do with, our colonial histories that are in some way separate and also interconnected, you know. So Guam and much of the North Pacific was colonized by, or is currently colonized by, the United States, whereas here, Aotearoa, obviously, there is a relation to the crown and whatnot. And like Samoa and Tonga have relations with England, right?
Yeah.
You know, so there's that. There's a historical aspect to why, in some ways, we're separated. And in media, that's prevalent as well. But, you know, it also trickles down into other aspects of life. Like, for instance, they have the Maori and Pacifica scholarship at AUT, which I don't qualify for. I'm an Indigenous person from Guam, but I guess because, people are blind to it.
Yeah, is it like a sort of, which is awful to say, but it's like a different kind of Pacific. Is that
a
sort
different
of what,
kind
yeah.
of Pacific? Yeah.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I had no idea. So and obviously, as we're talking about, that trickles into media, and I feel like we are quite disconnected from the Pacific. We don't hear much about it. I talked to West Papua Action Auckland today about the lack of Pacific, the lack of media in West Papua, which is also just means that nobody learns about it and nobody knows what's going on.
Exactly.
And I can imagine that's incredibly frustrating.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean,
considering we're supposed to be this like big Pacific group of peoples.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but there's a lot of reasons why Guam should be at the top of the list for things that New Zealand or Kiwis are interested in. One of them is because, you know, when we're talking about global militarization, Guam is a key strategic point for U.S. military forces. Mm. And because of that, they justify the condemnation of indigenous lands there. They're currently going through the process of a military buildup. So they want to actually bring in more U.S. Marines to the island. And they're building more federal facilities on indigenous lands, on sacred lands. And this is something that really the entire world should be looking at. And we saw that in 2017 when North Korea threatened Guam with a nuclear missile attack, you know. And that was one of the rare instances where international media actually flooded to the island to see what was going on. And for many people, it was their first encounter with Guam and U.S. colonial history.
So can you tell us a little bit more about your thesis and also about how, in your view, your research and Indigenous digital media can assist in decolonization?
Yeah, very briefly. And again, this is one of the only instances where I've ever been able to express this or my ideas on this openly, right? But I mean, very basically, my thesis will be looking at something I call the anti/colonial binary. And it's this idea that there is the mainstream media as an institution, as a traditional media institution, and all that represents pitted up against indigenous digital media, which allows indigenous activists to bypass, the gates of mainstream media itself. There are these two competing forces And yeah, really just trying to grapple with what that means, the dynamics of that. That's something that my thesis looks at, you know. As far as how indigenous digital media can aid in decolonization, there's techno positivism and techno pessimism, you know, when you're looking at these things, right? And from a lot of the literature that's coming out of the Pacific tends to view indigenous people's engagements with digital media in a more positive light. This is something that connects people. This is something so that when people are moving from Samoa to Aotearoa, they can maintain connectivity with their families, right? And in the same regard, that's also true for Chamorros in Guam. Mm. And the ability for Chamorros to use digital media to publish things, to publish their own perspectives, independent of mainstream media, which has its roots in colonialism.
Mm. Yeah. So it's about giving bringing back a voice to somebody.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
About their own history and their own things. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So both of you, what's up next? What are we going to be talking about next week? What's going on?
Well, I think going on what Manny was saying, we are also I think there are a lot of questions asked about New Zealand media and how they're factoring in the voices of those who have been misrepresented and marginalised, especially in light of Christchurch and how Muslims have been portrayed consistently prior to the attacks. We're interested in exploring more about how to give those people a better voice in the media, and how to increase diversity in the coverage. Other than that, we'll be continuing with coverage of the Solomon Islands election as the voting comes in, as the counting continues. Also, the Indonesian general election is next week. So that's and going what you're saying with West Papua, that's very, very significant. There's a lot of people who don't feel like they should be participating. There's a lot of disenfranchisement there. I mean, it's there's a lot of insurgency as well, a lot of violence. So that will be something to follow. That's pretty much it. There's going to be a lot of stories.
So, So you can read all about the Pacific Media Centre updates on asiapacificreport.nz. If anybody out there would like to have a look, doing amazing work. So, head on over there.
I thought I might also say there's an amazing exhibition about the Dawn Raids that open on Saturday in Otara. Mm. So I don't know if you've talked about that, but I went there and it's pretty educational. It's called Educate to Liberate. Awesome. I just thought I'd mention that because it's there's a lot of little known stories and material that's become available. So if anyone wants to learn about what Pacific people went through in the 70s and the aftermath, it's a great way to do that. So do pop on down and visit.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Michael and Manny.
That was the Southern Cross.